We greet you with a smile. DestinationCulture.com. It's David Farini, Dan Cancian, and Emmett Gates bringing you another broadcast where smart working, as they call this in Italy. We're back in the UK, all of us, and we're happy to be back from Como. Dan and I went there. Next up, we've got Emmett ready to come to Milano, as you will see down the bottom of your screens. Do check out our social platforms, Facebook, Insta, TikTok, Twitter, all those things, and especially the website. Let's get into the first order of the day. Toto Schillaci has passed, sadly, after, you know, everyone remembers him for that Italian 90 performance, came from next to nowhere, playing at Messina, all of a sudden thrust into the international arena, into the spotlight, and did what he did. Played up forward with Robbie Baggio. I saw Robbie Baggio actually put up an Instagram post yesterday to pay tribute to Toto. Guys, sad day.
Yeah, very sad day. I mean, 59 is no age, really, is it? And I think it's sad, particularly because for people of our age, it's something that it marks like a generational shift. I think Italia 90 was arguably the last of the, in inverted commas, pure World Cups before football became this giant commercial and financial juggernaut that seems impossible to stop. And maybe it's nostalgia, maybe it's, you know, the feeling that we're all getting old, but it just felt like everything was better back then. You know, the kits, the players, perhaps not the football, but there was just something special about the World Cup, and he embodied it.
Yeah, it was more organic back then, Dan. I agree with you wholeheartedly, 100%. Emmett, what about you? You've put a piece up on Destination Culture about Schillaci's passing.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people, obviously in Italy, you know, in Italy, he's associated with, you know, the Magic Knights and that summer when Italy hosted Italia 90. But for people in the UK and especially in Ireland, because he knocked Ireland out at the quarterfinals, he's endeared himself to people all around the world. And it's kind of like I posted on Twitter, I think Schillaci was one of the last players that not exactly come from an unknown, but because of the pure saturation of football now, you can get so much information, so much footage, so much stats on players before they've hardly even kicked the ball. Whereas Schillaci, he went to Italia 90 as a backup striker, and 3 weeks later he left a national hero, and he's one of the last to be able to do that, because you just simply can't do it now. And it's, as Dan said, it kind of, his passing brings back memories of a cleaner, purer, more simpler time in football before the commercial beast, you know, set in. And yeah, it's definitely it's a sad, obviously any passing of a footballer sad, but yeah, for Schillaci's, typically, you know, it's a reminder of what football used to be.
Absolutely. We're going to touch on Toto's life in a separate podcast. We're going to dedicate some time to him. That will be towards his funeral date, whenever that is. We're going to meander through the Champions League matches that have already happened this week. Also, there's one that still is yet to be played. We're recording this just before Atalanta take on Arsenal. But Juventus, Bologna, Milan and Inter, we're going to finish off with that big one at the Gevis Stadium. And look, Emmett, you're in the kitchen there. I can see that Juventus are cooking up some goodies. 3-1 against PSV. Yildiz, McKennie, Nico Gonzalez, then Saibari with a good finish at the end. That Yildiz goal, he's a connoisseur of flamboyant goals. It seems, does Juve have their new Alex Del Piero?
No pressure there for Yildiz. I mean, he did break his record to become Juve's youngest scorer in the Champions League of all time, beating Del Piero's record, I think, by around a year. But you want to keep the pressure off him. You know, he's only still a teenager. He's still a lot, there's still a lot of growth there, a lot to develop. But you just need to give him the freedom, take away the pressure. But, you know, what a goal. And yeah, he's definitely a superstar in the making, but I think it's key to keep the pressure off him and just let him, you know, develop at his own pace. But yeah, what a goal.
Absolutely. Is this a case of Juve being great or PSV filling their nappies? Did they go there and not perform to their very best? And Coop Miners looking good, winning balls and helping the tempo of Juventus, but PSV in that performance, is it Juve just being simply too good?
I think that it's a bit of both. Juve definitely good. They needed a result like that after the two stalemate draws in Serie A. But PSV, they were a bit underwhelming, shall we say. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot of these with the current format in the Champions League. Because while it may help smaller teams get through, you're also going to have occasions such as these where you have just, the teams are overmatched. PSV have won the league in the Netherlands last season. They are top of the Eredivisie this season. But it looked men against boys for the majority of the game.
Yeah, it did. Look, three decent goals there. McKennie's goal was a good one. And that El Sombrero move by Nico Gonzalez, flipping the ball from one side of the defender around the back, getting through, putting the ball in. Vlahovic with a touch, McKennie with a finish. McKennie's not every Juventino's favourite player, Emmett. He scored a goal, and now I guess he's got Nico Gonzalez to thank. Nico Gonzalez was criticised after his Serie A performances, but the stats showed that PSV deserved a goal. They did get one in the end, 15 to 12 goal attempts. Also, the XG, 2.57 against 0.099. So it pretty much played out. Exactly how the algorithms would assume. We've heard about the rise of Di Gregorio. Is this a crisis now that Juve have conceded their first goal of the season, Emmett?
I think it is. I think he should be dropped for Matteo Perin. And actually, he should be sold on the back of conceding that goal. I mean, Juve, statistically, have the best defence in Europe's top five leagues. In the league, anyway, they haven't conceded in the four games. But I think, as Thiago Mata said after the game, if all your biggest concern coming out of the game is conceding a late goal that didn't mean anything, you've got no problems, really. So, yeah, I mean, obviously any goalkeeper will want to keep a clean sheet, but all things considered, I think Di Gregorio will be happy with what he's done so far in his Juve career.
Is it an omen, considering that Napoli are coming to town, the Allianz Stadium, which I will mention that we've got the stadium guide available on destinationcalcio.com. Allianz Stadium, we were there for Juventus Como. It's going to be phenomenal this weekend, Napoli in town. It's second on the ladder against third in the standings, depending on which part of the world you come from, whether it's a lateral standings or Campionato or whatever it is. But it's Napoli, then Genoa away, then it's RB Leipzig in the Champions League again. Let's move on to Bologna, who didn't do too badly. They fared fairly well, 60 years since European Cup Champions League status for them. The Renato Dallara in full voice, Skorupski doing well. The penalty given away by Posh, he lacked that pace to keep up with Wijnaldum. That just seems like a player that's made up back on PS. But Skorupski diving to his left to save that. A frustrating night considering the stats. The weather didn't help. Castro and Orsolini looking lively, and Doi slid that pass through. Castro nearly beating the keeper, Ruznik. Bologna, to their credit, kept coming. Shakhtar thinking the footballing gods, thanking them at the end for nicking an away result against Bologna. That's an interesting sign, considering Shakhtar usually fairly good at this level. Look, Vincenzo Italiano, Dan, you did a piece on him following the Como match, which we attended. What is in store for him?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Italiano has been pleading for time since he was installed to replace Thiago Motta. And you can see why he's been pleading for time. Last night was an improvement. Bologna looked, as you said, more solid, more direct. They had a better tempo of the game. But they just cannot score. They cannot score to save their lives. And it's interesting when you look at their sort of issues in front of goal, because they lost Joshua Zirkzee to United, but it's not like Zirkzee was an overly prolific striker. He scored 11 goals in Serie A last season, so while he did leave a gap, it's not like they have to replace a 30 goal a season sort of striker. And Italiano, again, there was more of the same from him in the post-match press conference. He said that they need to be more clinical in front of goal, they need to be better at taking their chances. And I just wonder, where their play, there is something missing. There's something that is, these players are not getting what it wants them to do, because the refrain has been the same for the best part of 4 or 5 weeks now. It was the same case in Como. In Como, they actually did get their chances. They did take their chances, rather. And the problem for them was they didn't create anywhere near enough of them to win the game. And last night, it was again back to creating loads of chances and failing to taking them. So they have to get this sorted then quickly, because they've got a tough run of games coming up. They've got Liverpool and Villa away from home in the Champions League. So Italiano wants time, but as I brought in my piece earlier this week, I don't think he's going to get it if results don't start coming in quickly.
Well, the results speak for themselves. He's winless in 5 competitive games. You mentioned that they've lost Zigzi, of course. He went to Manchester United, but there's also an ACL injury for Ferguson. Salamaker's left. Calafiori off to Arsenal. Christensen as well, no longer there. Thiago Motta, the big one, of course. They all bought into his system. Emmett, do you think this is a problem for Vincenzo Italiano, where everyone bought into the Motta system? Are they buying into the Italiano system?
Yeah, I don't think so. And I think, obviously, Motta propelled Bologna into the top 5 playing a certain way. And, you know, as you said, a few, and they're all key, the key players have left or injured. The ones that are left, it's obviously going to take them time to adjust to Italiano's, you know, 4-3-3. But I think without the quality of players that maybe Italiano had at Fiorentina, I don't know if this system that he wants to employ is going to work, and I don't know, as Dan said, if he's going to get time. So yeah, I think it is a learning curve, but I don't know if, yeah, like I said, Italiano is going to get time to actually implement it, because he could be gone in the next few weeks.
He could be, and they're counting on Riccardo Orsolini. He's the captain. Remo Freuler, lucky they've got him. Also Fabian playing well, young kids, young aspiring Italian, 21 years of age. Just having a look through the flash score up here. Castro up forward. He did okay, I thought. And Doi and Castro trying to combine there to beat Ruznik in goal. And at the end of the day, it's a situation where they've got Monza away this weekend. And after that, it is Atalanta visiting the Renato Dallara. Then, as Dan said, Liverpool away. It's Parma. It's Genoa after that. And then Villa. So it's tough going for Italiano. In my point of view, I'm just not sure if he's going to make it through to that Villa game unless results start changing. He needs a win, and he needs it badly. I'm not sure the Felsine fans are going to be appreciating what he's brought so far. And Dan, we were in Como on the weekend to see Bologna play. Fantastic little excursion that we had, 3 nights in Como. We went off to see at the Giuseppe Sinigaglia Stadium, Bologna visiting. Como put in a fantastic performance. I thought that first 70 minutes, we've got a pot up, of course, that people can check out on our YouTube channel. But Dan, disappointing day for Como in the end, 2 goals up. And as you said, Italiano, well, he kind of throws everything at his opponent when he's down. So he threw on a few subs. It paid off with Illing Jr. But based on their early season form in Serie A, will they get back to the Champions League or even Europa League? Can they instill that sense of winning, of being a European side with Sartori and, of course, Fenucci running the club? Are they going to hold on to Italiano, and do they belong here? Will they get back here?
I think that's a loaded question. Would they belong? Would they belong in the Champions League? On the basis of last season, yes, but you just can't see them finishing the top 5 this season. You can't see them finishing the Europa League, and not just because teams around them are likely to be better than they were last season, but as Emmett said, there's just not enough time. I don't think there may not be enough time for him to implement his system. And ultimately, if your team doesn't score goals, you can have the best system in the world, but you're not going to have results to show for it.
Yeah, and Emmett, Thiago Motta was there. He's now with Juventus. You can see the difference from him leaving one club and going to the other and bringing what he's got to Juventus. He's changed their mentality. They look a lot cleaner despite that Allegri ball performance against Empoli. They were quite good against PSV. Bologna, though, with Italiano, you can see the night and day, the contrast between the two coaches. Do they belong in Europe on not just on the early season form, but can they turn this around to get there? There's still so much time left in the season.
I mean, when they finished in the top five last season, everybody was like, yeah, it's a wonderful thing to see, you know, a team punching above their weight and getting into the Champions League. And I was kind of the opinion that, yes, it's nice and it's good to see change in football and teams getting their shot. But at the same time, you know how the modern day game works. Any team that has one good season, they're broke apart by the beginning of the next season. And I feared that's what was going to happen to Bologna, and that's exactly what happened. You know, as we've all alluded to, Calafiori left, Salamakers left, Xerxes left, Mata left, and what you're left with is a shell of a team that there was last season. So I don't think, I agree with Dan, I think it would be very hard. You know, even if Italiano gets the season, I still don't think Bologna is going to be anywhere near, you know, even Europa League places this year. I think it was just a one season deal, and now they're going to return to the mean, which is probably 9th, 10th in and around there. It's sad to see, but I think that's just the way it's going to go.
Yeah, based on early season form, it looks like Napoli might be springing a surprise, making their comeback of sorts, and also Empoli and Udinese with good early season form. We'll see if they last the distance. Let's move on to Inter nullifying Manchester City. 0-0, a few changes from the side that drew at Monza. And we were there for that game, Dan, to see Inter. Pavard, De Vrij, Aslani, Fratesi, Mkhitaryan, Di Marco, Lautaro Martinez. Lots of changes for Inzaghi against City. Carlos Augusto pushed up out wide on the left with Di Marco unavailable. Acebi, Bastoni and Bissett came in. So a total overhaul at the back, a midfield overhaul as well. Only Darmian remained in that midfield. Taremi started against City as well. Emmett, we'll throw to you on this. What were your thoughts on Inzaghi's methods and his approach to this game?
I mean, you can clearly see that he's trying to implement rotation, you know, making the changes. The system stayed the same, you know, 3-5-2, which he's, you know, brought into the club over the last couple of years. And you can see what he's trying to do. He's trying to give game time to players like Zielinski, who had maybe, 35 minutes of football since signing. And Taremi giving him a start at the expense of Lautaro Martinez, although I don't think that worked, but I can see his thinking behind it. I don't know if it was wise kind of bringing in, you know, maybe second tier players for a game of this magnitude against City in Manchester, but in the end up Inter held their own. But I can see, yeah, he's trying to freshen things up, give players a game, obviously keeping, you know, one eye on the derby on Sunday. So yeah, I think rotation was the name of the game for Inzaghi, and hoping that Inter could still get something, which they did in the end.
Yeah, Taremi and Turam, they didn't gel all that much, but the positives were Barella was phenomenal, Zielinski also displaying world-class levels. Going to the Etihad and asserting yourselves against a side that hasn't lost there in years. Dan, you can touch on that subject for us.
Yeah, I mean, I slightly disagree with that. I think this was a textbook performance for Inter Milan. Inzaghi has made clear that he doesn't have starters and substitutes. He has 25 players to choose from. And it just goes to show how good Inter's squad is, that he can sort of rotate his players without performance levels dropping too much. I thought Inter needed to respond after the game against Monza. As you said, we were there, and they were woeful. They were sort of sluggish in possession. They looked tired off the ball. They looked like they thought they could just turn up and get a win, which wasn't the case. And last night it was the Inter that we saw last season, you know, aggressive, diligent from a tactical standpoint. I thought it was interesting how pretty much every opportunity they created came either on the counter-attack or by them bypassing City's pressing quickly. That's what Inzaghi wants. And I thought, well, they could have won the game, because Mkhitaryan had a great chance in the second half. Darmian was almost clean to run goal, and for reasons that I still haven't figured out,
I don't know what that was about,
decided to backheel the ball back to Barella. It would have been a United legend forevermore at this match when in the top corner, but sadly it wasn't to be. Joking aside, I think Inter have nothing to fear against big teams in Europe if they play like they did last night. And when you consider that they've got the derby coming up, it could be a really good week for them.
Yeah, definitely an incline from that Monster performance to then go to Manchester and get a good result. Inter had some decent chances. It seemed like City was set up waiting to pounce on errors from Inter's defensive third when they wanted to progress up the field. Damian's back heel. Haven't seen him do that too much in his career, Dan. Not at Manchester United, not at Parma, not anywhere. Perhaps this was his Maicon moment, coming in from that right side, trying to show us his Brazilian inner. Brazilian. Foden, Gundogan and Mkhitaryan with chances to win it. Sommer ultimately was massive as City piled it on late. Goalless, but world-class football from both sides, I think, into showing they have what it takes. And we've been honing in on Davide Fratesi after his big performances for Italy. Dan, you've written a few pieces on that. I will direct people to go to destinationculture.com and check on those. But the next match is the big one in terms of Serie A. It's the Derby della Madonnina. It will be played at the Giuseppe Meazza in the suburb of San Siro. That will be Sunday night. We'll be there to cover that one for Destination Calcio. Let's move on to the team that will be playing in that derby, Milan, who were thumped, plain and simple, against Liverpool. 3-1, Pulisic and Konate, Van Dijk and Szoboszlai with the goals. We wrote a piece on these two giants of Europe. We put that up on the site. We'll direct people to go and see that. It could have been much worse, considering Salah hit the bar twice, guys. Did Milan score too early? So that is a question I will... Let's see who I'll give this one to. Emmett.
I think it didn't matter when Milan scored, because Liverpool were just going to beat them. They were just, you could see it. It was evident. After the first 5 minutes, Milan scored. There was a bit of pressure, and then Liverpool felt their way into the game, and then it was night and day, the difference. And Liverpool, honestly, could have won by 6 or 7, and that's not exaggerating. And they were playing in third gear most of the time. They just looked tactically, structurally, pace, physicality, a game plan. They just looked oceans above Milan, and you're kind of thinking, what has Paulo Fonseca done in the months that he's been? He was brought into the job in June, and it's now September, and Milan look a team without a game plan, without a system, without a formation, players not knowing what to do, where to go, what positions to hold. Liverpool, I don't think it really mattered, David, when Milan scored, whether it was the first minute or the 90th, Liverpool were always going to win this game, and that's how it played out.
Yeah, it appears as though Milan is sliding at a rate of Napoli 2023. It was a set-piece shit show, to put it bluntly. Dan, Pavlovic and Tomori at the back, do they need more time?
They need more time, but as Emmett suggested, they also need a plan to follow, and there doesn't seem to be one. Jurgen Klopp often describes his football as organised chaos. With Milan, there is chaos in abundance, but without any hint of organisation of any kind. I watched Milan this season three or four times now, and I just can't for the life of me work out what they're trying to do. Are they trying to press? Are they trying to be a team that counterattacks? Are they trying to be neither? I don't know. And the players don't seem to know either, which is far more concerning as far as Fonseca is concerned. Again, you know, the defence looked shambolic, but I don't think you can just put it down to individual mistakes. It just, as Emmett said, there is a lack of structure. Players look at each other, waiting for someone else to step up, waiting for someone to hold the position, and it never seems to happen. And it just, the confusion is not just on the pitch, the confusion is behind the scenes as well, because I don't think the Fonseca was the right man. I've been sceptical about him since day one. It was an odd choice, and I don't think it's going to work out for them. Now, yes, they could win the derby, it could turn it around, but in all likelihood, they could get thumped in the derby and it could be gone before next week.
Well, they don't usually fare too well in the derby of late. Fonseca is in charge of a side that can score goals, seemingly, against weaker sides, but can't stop conceding them. If we take out that Venezia result, a side that probably would be top six Serie B this season, I think, Venezia. Pavlovic and Tomori at the back. I'm just not sure if Fonseca will have enough time to get them working a bit better together. Problems at right back as well. Is that the weak link, the structural issue, the indecision at both corners? I think Tiziano Crudelli, the Milan, the old Milan fan. Actually, I've got a video I want to play. I'm just going to get it up on my phone. Just have a look at this. It's old school Italian TV, 2024.
Oh, that is tremendous.
And this is the kind of stuff that I actually want to cue it up to a bit where Crudelli loses it, and it's at the start. Here we go.
Classic Crudelli.
Oh, superb.
Off he goes.
Well, it lives in the moment. I give him that.
Yeah, I should actually forward it to the part. Well, they don't show him disappointed. I'm not sure if you guys remember when Atalanta beat Milan. I think it was 5-0 a few years back, and Crudelli was reduced to tears. But that was the start of the game. Obviously, that is a 45-minute clip on YouTube that anyone can look up. And for the rest of it, it's quite drab. And Milan, with that kind of performance, that's what they're going to get out of Tiziano Crudelli. Maignan gets injured. Lorenzo Torriani comes in to make his senior debut at 19 years of age in a Champions League game. Is it all unravelling? Can Inter and Fonseca, can they end his spell there with three or four daggers this Sunday?
I think they can, and I think they probably will. There's the gap in quality and the gap in coaching between Inter and Milan at the minute is, as Evan says, just like night and day, as it was with Liverpool.
Yeah, and if we have a look at Milan's upcoming fixtures, just going to go back to the app here, it's we've got Inter on Sunday, then Lecce, then Leverkusen away in the Champions League, Fiorentina away, and then Udinese, who are top of the table technically, are coming to the San Siro. Then it's Club Brugge. You would expect them to beat the Belgian side. Will Fonseca still be there? Who knows? Let's move on to the game that hasn't been played yet, the Champions League, the fifth Italian side, Atalanta-Arsenal. Atalanta come from behind win over Fiorentina. They're back on track seemingly after getting smashed by Inter, but everyone seems to be, apart from Monza, getting belted by them in Serie A. Always plenty of goals in their matches, an average of four per game for Atalanta thus far in the league. They've already played once in Europe. That was against Real Madrid, where they lost 2-0, but they show they can match it at times with bigger clubs. Atalanta's fourth Champions League participation. Every time they've been drawn against an English side, they've only ever beaten them once. Of course, that was Liverpool they beat Liverpool, I should say, 3-1 on aggregate on their way to lifting the Europa League. What can we expect from Atalanta, Dan?
I think more of the same, really. They're going to go out. Gasperini only knows one way to play, and that's, you know, on the front foot. And why not? It's worked for them in Europe before. It may as well work for them again. I think going back to what we were saying about Bologna and whether they belong at this level just shows how good a job Gasperini has done, that despite losing players, he's basically turned Atalanta into a solid reality in European football, whether it's the Champions League, whether it's the Europa League. They are a tremendous addition to the competition, and I do think that they could cause Arsenal troubles. Arsenal are in great form, obviously. The win against Spurs on Sunday, but Atalanta away is not a game to be taken lightly.
Yeah, and Emmett, what do you think? What can we expect from Atalanta?
Yeah, I mean, you're always, you know, a Gasperini team is always a Gasperini team. I think it was Pep who likened facing Gasperini as like going to the dentist. So Arsenal and Arteta are going to have their work cut out for them, especially with Atalanta at home and the new. The stadium completely refurbished now, and it looks spectacular. And hopefully, David, we get to witness it firsthand on Monday night against Como. So it's going to be 24,000 packed, raucous atmosphere. And you know, technically, it's going to be a fascinating battle. And you know, Atalanta on their day can match any team in Europe, I believe. And yeah, Arsenal are going to have their work cut out for them, I think, tonight.
Yeah, Arsenal will be aware of the dangers in front of them. Both sides are potent. The Gunners beating Tottenham on the weekend. Declan Rice is available after missing the North London derby. Arsenal have only won one of their past six away Champions League matches, losing four of those. So that plays into Gasperini's hands. It could be Matteo Retegui's night. He scored three times between the 20th minute and the halftime period. Also, Kai Havertz has scored twice in that period of the game. Both at 25 years of age. Exciting stuff. Retegui with four goals in four Serie A matches so far. We'll see what Atalanta can produce, what they can cook up in their kitchen, Emmett. We will mention that we've just put up our favourite goals, Emmett, myself and Dan. Three different selections, but you'll love every single one of them. We will wrap up the show. Go to our YouTube, TikTok, Insta, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you can. We're in beta mode right now in September. We're going to get into a full launch in October. Big announcements, including an addition to the staff next week. And then a very big announcement coming towards October. And that is going to be massive. We are a cultural startup with big ambitions, big announcements to come. So, boys, Emmett, Dan, thank you. Dan, you're taking the weekend off. You'll be running things from back in the UK. Yeah. Emmett and I will be off to Milan.
I am not jealous at all. I'm not jealous at all of you two being the San Siro for the derby.
Yeah.
Not in the slightest.
Yeah, and also we'll be catching up, I should mention, hopefully with our friend of the show, Adriano Del Monte, in Milan to discuss the Derby della Madonnina. Hopefully that will take place on Saturday afternoon. There is a slight chance if our plane is on time, but we'll be going to watch some Serie C, Arsione Milano and Vicenza. We'll leave it there, guys. Make sure you head to destinationculture.com.